It's Ask the Pastor time. Or we could say ask the missionary. Or we could ask the construction man. Anything else you do?
Make a mess of things. You betcha.
We can ask
stir it up.
The mess maker here.
Yeah.
Now that would be me. You're here to straighten me up. The voice that you hear is that of Pastor Randy Wilkin, pastor at The Rock on Kings Highway, also part of the Acts 1-8 Mission Society, a regular guest here on our Bible study program. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you have a question that you would like to put to Pastor Wilkin during this hour, what's keeping you busy these days?
Oh, man, we are. Oh, I got to tell you.
Every time you come here, it's something different.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Can never, it's like, you get bored of something, you move on to something else. No, not really. We're working with the, Board for Human Care and World Relief, working on a project called College Hill. And we're going up to the College Hill area this weekend. And what is really neat is the LCMS, well, the Board for Human Care, whatever, they've been working on this project for quite a while. And it's morphed. And I love where it has gone. At first, they thought they're going to build new houses up there in College Hill. They're going to, take up entire city blocks and we're going to build new houses.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't happen, and it's not like, oh, man, somebody wasn't efficient enough or they made mistakes. It's just, no, the Lord wasn't going to let that happen. I don't know why. It just didn't happen. Then they decide, well, they're going to buy some existing homes that are abandoned, and we'll fix those up. And that didn't happen either. One of the reasons is, let's just say the powers that be in the city, and we'll leave it at that, just didn't want to see this happen. So now what they've done, and I love it, is they decided, okay, I tell you what, we got a small grant. Why don't we go into people's homes that already live there and let's help them where they're at? Not renovate their homes, not give them a new addition or, a brand new kitchen or something like that. All we're doing is literally going into people's homes that can't afford. They're the tweeners. They're in between poverty and making it. But they make too much that the government says, oh, you make too much money, we can't help you. But yet they're senior citizens. They have very little chance to find loans and find people to help them because they're not the tearjerk, this is abject poverty. And so they're people that have fallen through the cracks. So what we're doing is going up, and we found them. And we have an embedded person in the neighborhood. And this person just gets to know these individuals. So we go up and we're just going into their homes and helping them and fixing them up. And we got a ton of volunteers coming. And it's going to be this weekend, Saturday, 8 o'clock at, it's St. Paul's up in College Hill. St. Paul's Lutheran Church. That's where we're meeting at 8 o'clock. And we're going to strike out in a neighborhood. We've already ID'd. The houses were, and the people we're going to work with, and it's kind of exciting versus trying to do something big like Habitat for Humanity or what is it, one on TV, Extreme Makeover, Home Makeover?
Yeah,
where they get the cameras and everybody's crying because I can't believe what they just did. And I'm sorry, I just don't quite agree with that stuff because that's the cameras and that's what people want to see and the tear jerk. And these are people that just are, they're forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going in and helping them.
Sounds like church work to me.
Actually, yeah. This is what the church should be doing, being concerned about their neighbors.
You, I don't want to mischaracterize what you do, you've been in deep urban settings, you've inner city settings.
Mm-hmm.
For those people who live out in rural areas that are more or less unstained by some of the things that trouble the inner city, or people who live in the suburbs, is abortion a big problem? Are you coming in contact with abortion, its ramifications? Do you think more because you do a lot of work in the inner city than other places? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not quite following the question, but I think what you're asking is, in the work that we do we run across people that have been, affected by it? or it's happening more?
Well, I guess I should state my assumption first. I'm assuming that people who are in poverty are more likely to be looking for abortions than people who are not in poverty. Now, don't get me wrong. I know that people out in the rural areas, and I know people in the suburbs, are getting abortions.
Mm-hmm.
I know that this is not strictly an urban problem. But is it a more prominent problem among impoverished people? Do you, and this is not a knock on rural pastors or suburban pastors, don't get me wrong here, but do you, as a person who does a lot of work in the inner city with impoverished people, just like you just described what you're going to be doing, do you run into abortion and its consequences and its complications more, do you think, than other pastors?
I think being in the urban... all right, you mentioned something. I'm just going to back up just a little bit. You said something about the rural not being touched quite as much as the urban. And actually, I work in the rural as well. I work with these small churches out in the rural areas, and they're wanting to come in and work with us in the urban area. And when I talk to the people out there in the rural area, the same problems exist. We have a real drug problem in the inner city, in the urban. What's amazing is they have the same drug problem out in the rural area. It's called meth. And they're dealing the same way. I have met young people that have fallen through the cracks. I have met young people that left the church. They got into that life of drugs out in the rural areas now. And now finally getting their lives back together. And I meet them, and they just want to know, how can I change my life? How can I, you know, the church really doesn't, I'm kind of broad stroking now, okay? The church doesn't really want us because we're tainted people. And they're absolutely right. Now, the difference between the urban and the rural is out in the rural area, they're so spread out that, you know, to find out that one person had an abortion, it gets around town out there, something fierce, and it's just like wildfire. And that person is, they're ostracized and they're labeled and, you know, they're not allowed back in the church, whatever. In the urban, it is so dense that we have all those problems all condensed down into a small area. And one of the things that we have been finding in the urban is here's how we're going to address teen pregnancy problems, especially with the poor. See, you can't afford this child. And so, therefore, here's a solution. Get rid of it. Well, it's not a child yet. It's just a problem. I don't even call it a fetus. It's just a situation. Let's solve this situation. And it's so dense. That's how we deal with those problems.
Is this something that's high on your priority list? Is this, I mean, you do a lot of good work in a lot of different places in a lot of different ways. I could see where abortion would be on your radar screen, but, you know, maybe you're just overwhelmed by the drug problem. Maybe that's the issue of the day. Is abortion on your radar screen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We work with young people over on the Illinois side of the river. And work with some young people there. And I did work with a young lady that she would not come straight out and say it, but by all the indications, every single thing that she said, she had a problem, it was taken care of. And now she had the same problem again, and she's probably going to have to take care of it the same way. This is how she spoke with me. She won't come straight out and say it.
There have been some signals in the media here recently. And being a member of the media myself, I've learned not to trust too many of the signals I see coming out of the media. But there have been some positive signals coming out of the media here recently, particularly in terms of statistical analysis, surveys, that the tide may really be shifting as the next generation processes what abortion is and what it means away from abortion and in the direction of pro-life. Are you seeing any signs like that in your ministry?
when I work with these young people, we stop talking about problems. We stop talking about, this being a problem. We start going down, we start to take them back into a relationship with God. And as you get them into a relationship with God, they start to realize, okay, what the world tells me I should be doing and what the world says is okay is causing me a lot of grief and a lot of problems. And when I finally come to the realization, okay, the world says it's okay to have an abortion, I know that now I have to deal with that for the rest of my life. I have to deal with the fact that is a fact, that was a human being. Now I have to deal with this. When we start dealing with the God relationship with these young people, it really does change. And I see the shift.
There's a story on Fox News, and the headline is Planned Parenthood Director Quits.
I saw that.
After watching abortion on ultrasound. And the story says the former director of a Planned Parenthood clinic in Southeast Texas said she had a change of heart after watching an abortion last month, and she quit her job and joined a pro-life group in praying outside the facility. She's 29 years old. Her name is Abby Johnson. She used to escort women from their cars to the clinic. In the 8 years she volunteered and worked for Planned Parenthood in Bryan, Texas. That means she began that effort when she was 21. But she says she knew it was time to leave after she watched a fetus, her word, crumple as it was vacuumed out of a patient's uterus in September. She said, when I was working at Planned Parenthood, I was extremely pro-choice. But after seeing the internal workings of the procedure for the first time on an ultrasound monitor, I would say there was a definite conversion in my heart, a spiritual conversion. What do you think's going on there? I mean, you don't have all the details in the world. It would be fun to talk to this lady. Maybe we should try to get her on the radio. This is a 180-degree turn. I mean, when you go from pro-choice to pro-life, that's no small change of direction. And she has identified it as a spiritual conversion. What do you think's going on there?
Okay. Now, if I sound like I'm kind of going off track here, I'm not. And you just draw me back if I go way off a little bit too far. But one of the things we do with these young people is we sit down with them and we talk about the scriptures. But unlike some, which will do it like a quote-unquote Bible study, like being in school, there's right or wrong, and I want the answers. Here's, you know, answer A, B, C, or D, which one is the right answer. What we do is we sit down with these young people, and not just young people, but even adults will come in, and we open their eyes to something. And it's called opening your eyes to actually the scriptures are real, they're alive, they're not stories, they're actually happening now. You know, people, the 180-degree conversion, you see it happening. And that's not us. That's not you and me being so smart, you know, and we sit down and argue with this young lady. It's God doing it. Because who showed her? The ones doing the abortion opened her eyes because they said, oh, yeah, come on in, watch this abortion. Maybe that's how it happened, but she saw it for herself. She's been told. She's been lied to. Her eyes have been, you know, glazed over. She's been lied to all these years and into thinking, no, it's not a fetus. It's not a human being in there. No, 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 no. It's just, you know, it's just a blob, whatever it is. We're taking out like a wart. We're just cutting it off. And it's not harming anything. As a matter of fact, going to help the patient. Or it's a tumor, that type of thing. Her eyes are being open. And her eyes are being opened by God. Not just hers, but the world's. Because as our technology starts to advance, and they said, all you have to do is just see it. What do they say? I was reading a statistic also on abortion. They were saying that they should, I don't remember what they were saying, they should make it a law or people that have seen it. Basically, if you see the ultrasound before you have the abortion, most of the time you won't. You won't have an abortion.
And what do you make of that, Pastor? Because I think, I presume that all of the facts, I say all, most of the facts about, I mean, these girls, women,
mm-hmm.
they know what a pregnancy is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had a health class at some point in your life, probably. You know what is inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know it's a baby. But somehow seeing it
mm-hmm.
puts you in a position to change your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently all the talking and all of the pro-life activity, and that doesn't seem to have as much effect as actually seeing this ultrasound.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't it seem like the facts ought to be persuasive enough?
Hmm. Let me see. I was in the Marine Corps. And now I was never in combat. So all I know is by, you know, talking to some of the guys that were in Vietnam and some of them after Desert Storm, et cetera. When we, you know, World War II, what did they call the enemy? You know, they had derogatory terms towards the enemy. You had derogatory terms towards the Germans and the Japanese,
right.
et cetera. And in Vietnam, I won't use the terms because they're not very, they're not really polite. Not something that we should repeat. But the reason why they do it is to dehumanize that person. It's easier to kill somebody that is your enemy and you have a term for them which is not human. And it's easier to kill them at a distance now
right.
than it is if you know them as, well, that's Fritz over there, and he has, you know, two children and a wife, and you see the pictures of them, etc. Not so easy once you know that that's actually a human being. If you know him just as the enemy, very easy to do it. And that's intentional for the military to do that. And I'm not saying that they're wrong or anything. It's just that's an intentional thing. Let's dehumanize the enemy. Make him so that, you know, you can do this. But ask any guy in the military if he's ever had to kill somebody face-to-face. Face-to-face combat where you actually see their face. It is so difficult to do it unless your life is in danger.
Yeah.
They do the same thing. Why do you think they call them, you know, an embryo or a zygote or whatever and a fetus?
That's an excellent point.
So that it becomes less human. But you see that face. There's no way. You can't do it. You see the face of your child inside of you. That's your child's face. Whether it looks like a little, you know, a little fish or whatever it is, you know, when we went in, we didn't have the ultrasound like they do now. But when my daughters all went in, it was just, well, I'm pregnant, I'm going to have a baby. They talk in very generic, non-emotional terms. The second they saw it, they're coming home, they're putting the ultrasound pictures on the refrigerator,
yeah.
just like you would any other child, and this
baby
is
pictures.
My child.
The story here says that Ms. Johnson, she says she became disillusioned with her job after her bosses pressured her for months to increase profits by
mm-hmm.
performing more and more abortions,
mm-hmm.
which cost patients between $505 and $695. There's a quote. Every meeting that we had was, we don't have enough money. We don't have enough money. We've got to keep these abortions coming. It's a very lucrative business, and that's why they want to increase numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Contrast that with a quote here from a spokesperson for Planned Parenthood. They say that they offer a range of services at its 850 health centers nationwide, providing pregnancy tests, vaccinations, and women's health services, including wellness exams, breast and cervical cancer screenings, contraception, STD testing and treatment. Diane Quest of Planned Parenthood says their focus is on prevention. That's what they want us to think.
Mm-hmm.
But Abby seems to pull the veil off of this.
Mm-hmm.
Every meeting was, we don't have enough money, we don't have enough money, we've got to keep these abortions coming. Is there a way to communicate to women of reproductive age that, at least as I see it, based on this reporting, you're a commodity?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, go ahead and get pregnant. We'll be there when the when the moment arrives. I guess I'm being a little cynical here, but I do have a pro-life bias. How do you see it?
Yeah, I have a pro-choice bias. It's called I have the choice to not get pregnant, or I have the choice of not getting a young lady pregnant, or to get her pregnant. I have that choice. That's my choice before the conception starts. And we should be, you know, we that's what we're working with in the urban area with some of these young people, is talking about those choices beforehand.
Well, now, you have properly put the horse before the cart here, because the abortion problem flows directly from a sexual morality problem.
Right.
And you address that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We talk about it.
How's that working for you? Because, you know, the movies and the television and the newspapers and the magazines and the celebrities and the cable and the internet, all working against you.
Okay, good. Because, and you're nailing it. All we can do is tell the truth. That's it. I can't persuade, I cannot argue them into decisions. I cannot convince them through arguments, etc. All I can do is tell them the
truth.
Tell
me the truth. Tell me the truth right now. Give me the argument.
Yeah, the truth is, all right, the world says go out and party, you know, have sex with whoever you're going to, because that's fun. That's what the world says. And just think about it. You know, you go out, and why is it that, how do I put this, that you're embarrassed, you go out, and some guys will go out and brag, not because they really enjoy it or anything. It's that now I get to brag about something and impress my friends. Now to the girl's detriment. And sometimes now it's really unbelievable in the urban where the girls are actually the ones that are more vocal about it, about, you know, losing their virginity, not being a virgin, etc. And they're more and more vocal about it. But see, now, it's like, I think she doth protest too much type attitude, which is the more you're vocal about it, the more it really disturbs you, and you're trying to calm your own spirit by saying there's nothing wrong with it, and I'm going to do it even more, etc. Now, the truth is, it's all going to hit you someday. It's all going to come crashing down on your head. And now I can sit here and condemn you and tell you what you're doing is absolutely wrong, and here's all the stuff that I can do and prove to you that it's absolutely wrong.
That doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. As a matter of fact, chases them away. I've just spoken recently.
You learned that firsthand, did you? Used to do it that way, and you said, this isn't working?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because, you know. I don't want to go there. yes, because the harder you try to tell somebody not to do something, they do it. Guess how I know that? I'm the one that if somebody was to say to me, you can't do that, that's exactly what I go out and I do, just to prove it. Oh, you're a Christian? Oh, you can't go out and drink? Oh, let me show you. Let me show you what I can do. And, you know.
Little rebellion streak in there, dude.
Oh, yeah, you betcha. That was my younger years now, not like last week or something. But, but I know it. That's human nature. The more that I tell you not to do something, the more I'm curious, the more I want to. And what I found is, okay, I'm not going to tell you it's okay.
Let's take a break here. You're listening to the Bible study. And Pastor Randy Wilkin is with us here. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
We enjoy receiving email at AM850KFUO, like this from a listener who says, I was listening to your program on the way home from work. I enjoy the afternoon show. I've been listening to KFUO for the last 10 years, and even though I'm a longtime Baptist, the station keeps me thinking and in tune to God. I do miss the music in the morning. It was a great uplifting before starting work, and I'm grateful that Paul has started playing a little more music again. Thank you, Ms. Summers, and AM850KFUO. And we thank you, Betty, for writing us.
As many as 5.3 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's destroys brain cells, causing memory loss and problems with thinking and behavior severe enough to affect work, lifelong hobbies, family life, and social relationships. November is National Alzheimer's Awareness Month. Someone you know is likely affected by Alzheimer's disease. For more information in the St. Louis area about Alzheimer's disease, visit alzstl.org.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Congressman Patrick Kennedy from Rhode Island has declared war of sorts on the Catholic Church. Mr. Kennedy has an absolute pro-abortion voting record, yet claims to be a Catholic. And he's accusing his church of not being pro-life because it won't support health care reform in its current form. Presently, it funds and facilitates abortion on demand, rations care to the elderly, and would force the medical community to participate in abortion. Kennedy's bishop, Thomas Tobin, responded by saying the congressman is irresponsible and ignorant of the facts. I'm grateful Bishop Tobin is taking such a bold action. I hope he'll further explain the meaning of excommunication to Congressman Kennedy. His contempt for unborn babies isn't worthy of his professed religious beliefs.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
You've been waiting patiently, and here it comes, the annual warehouse sale at Concordia Publishing House, Saturday, November 7th, 8 a.m. until noon, featuring teaching resources, children's books, Bible studies, bulletins, Bibles, music, and much more. Concordia Publishing House at 3558 South Jefferson, south of I-44, the Concordia Publishing House Warehouse Sale, Saturday, November 7th, 8 a.m. until noon, under the big tent.
Today there are 2.5 million breast cancer survivors in the United States. Join Barnes Jewish St. Peter's Hospital, the American Cancer Society, and AstraZeneca for the Many Faces of Breast Cancer event in St. Louis, a free educational event for survivors. On Thursday, November 12th at 6:30 p.m., leading medical experts will address a range of survivorship issues, including psychosocial support, risk of recurrence, and treatment options. Email manyfacesstllewis@zenogroupevents.com.
Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri has a lot to celebrate with you during the month of November. Last year, Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri placed 127 children in forever families through their domestic and international adoption programs. Find out how to celebrate during the month of November by visiting the website lfcsmo.org. There's a number of free events happening in the community. Visit lfcsmo.org.
Welcome to football season in the land of lean beef. A time when bold men brave the elements to fire up a fantastic feast of sizzling 95% lean ground beef burgers, proving their skill at the grill and allowing the entire gang to give a full 110% to their Sunday spectating. Discover the power of protein in the land of lean beef. Beef. It's what's for dinner.
Brought to you by Missouri's Cattle Farmers. For recipes or nutrition information, visit mobeef.org.
Listen to the Bible study. I'm Chuck Rathert, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Were you able to finish your thoughts there, Pastor Randy Wilkin, before we went to the break? Were you able to finish your thoughts?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, then if...
I think I did.
I think you did. If any return to you, then we can go back to that. Otherwise, I want to move on to something else here. The I think the legacy of the baby boom generation, when it's finally... moves on,
mm-hmm.
will, when the historians write it, it will be the full-scale rebellion against all forms of authority.
Mm-hmm.
The baby boom generation, to its credit, I think participated in a period in history where there was discrimination against people of color and responded positively to that. We can't say that the boomers fixed it,
mm-hmm.
but responded positively to it. Same thing, discrimination against women.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow it seems to me, I'm just being philosophical now. Always a dangerous thing.
Mm-hmm.
it seems to me, emboldened by those two noble pursuits, began to hack down boundary lines, authority lines everywhere, which has, I believe, resulted in the chaos that we have in our culture now. Now, here's an interesting story. And I'm going to try to twist this around and see if it has a theological implication. This is, I find this to be amazing. Now, this guy's not a boomer. He is the child of boomers, obviously. His name is Kane Kellett. And he was appearing in court recently on home invasion and aggravated battery charges. This is out of, appropriately enough, Woodstock, Illinois. But the story says, if you flip someone off in traffic, which is the vernacular for an obscene gesture, you might get angry stares or a nasty honk of the car horn. But if you do that in court, you can expect much more severe consequences. You're chuckling. Is that the Marine in you that's chuckling?
That's right.
A McHenry County man found that out the hard way. 24-year-old Kane Kellett raised his middle finger while he was being sworn in to face home invasion charges at a rights hearing, according to the newspaper The Daily Herald. He also hurled profanity at Judge G. Martin Zopp. Zopp promptly gave Kellett 6 months in jail for contempt of court. Kellett was wanted on charges of aggravated battery and assault. He is accused of attacking two people, including a pregnant woman, last month in Crystal Lake, according to Deputy Police Chief Dennis Harris. He is accused of punching the woman in the face and kicking her in the ribs after she fell on October 13th. He is also charged with home invasion on October 14th, in which he forced his way in by kicking down a door to a multifamily home in Crystal Lake. So if the facts are accurately reported here, punching a pregnant woman in the face, my sensibilities tell me that is indefensible. And whatever it is, whatever problem you've got with the people there in the multifamily home in Crystal Lake, bashing down the door is indefensible. So you would think, I realize that we've got some people here who are floating in a free zone that some of the rest of us haven't visited yet. You would think that when you go to stand before the judge, that you probably have examined your options and they're not very good. So you give the one-finger salute to the judge, and you hurl a profanity at him, and you go, does the word depravity start to fit in here anywhere? What do you think was going through? You've worked with a lot of young people, and you've probably heard a lot of stories. This guy's 24 years old. What's going through his mind, do you think? I mean, do you think that he thought the judge was going to say, whoa, obviously, you're pretty upset with the system here. Run along. It'll be all right. Did he think that was going to be the outcome?
Nope. He's probably dealing with a bunch of, he's into a culture of people.
A culture
of people. And don't know how else.
More people that think like this?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And they are, let me see. I'm going to show you how tough I am. And so I've been to prison. I've worked with guys. And they'll come out, and they'll show you their tattoos, and they'll show you how tough they were, and they'll show you their scars and how they were, you know, beat up and, you know, attacked, et cetera. And it becomes...
And that proves what?
Well, for you and me, I don't understand it. I'm sorry. You made a mistake. Just take your punishment. Ask for mercy, whatever you need to do. And no, instead what you do is you make it worse. And I just don't understand that. But see, you're absolutely right. We have gotten to, this is a sub-culture.
You know, I'm thinking that with our crowded prison system and our seemingly relaxed attitudes toward punishment, that this guy who punched a pregnant woman and kicked down a door to somebody's home probably would have gotten probation. He only got 6 months for doing what he did here. Probably would have gotten probation. But he found a way to get himself into prison. Now, you and I have seen a lot of strange things in our time. We've been around for a while. I don't understand this.
Absolutely.
I just don't, you know, this is just stupid with a capital S.
Yep. Yep. See, you're absolutely right when you said I don't understand it, because it is so culturally different. And I'm not talking, you know, a ethnic culture.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a whole culture of people that have written their own rules. And
a behavioral culture.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes. And they have, here's their whole culture. These are the rules and the norms. And this is how you're going to operate within these. Have you ever, we're just talking about just this, this past weekend. My daughter brings in she has a new dog. And it's a young thing, maybe 8 weeks, couple of months old, something like that. And the dog jumps up, and basically they try to establish where they land in the pecking order, within, you know, with all the other dogs. And, I just had to take the dog because it kept jumping up on my lap, and I had to take the dog by the neck, and it looks really tough and it looks really mean. And you just basically hold the dog down and by the neck and just say, are you going to calm down? Finally, the dog does. You let him go, and they start to realize, oh, you're above me in the pecking order. Now, that's the dog world. In our world, we do the same thing. We have judges, we have police, etc. In this culture, it's a whole new culture that we don't understand. And they have their own hierarchical, you are going to establish how mean and tough you are so you land within this culture.
So is this guy looking forward to high-fiving everybody in prison? Yeah, I gave judge an obscene gesture.
Yep.
And everybody's going to celebrate that? Is that what he's looking forward to?
I don't know about it in jail, but in his hometown or wherever he comes from, his group of people that he's hanging with, with those guys are all going, oh yeah, you know, so and so, he's such a tough guy, and yeah, we're so proud of him in their little social group. I run into these kids, and I run into them who have bought into all of that, and it's usually about the age that this young man's at, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24 years old. And they are so rebellious. They can do whatever they want, and the rules don't really apply to me. Until they end up in jail. Now, maybe 6 months in jail, he realizes he's not as tough as what he thinks he is. Because there's people in that jail that are a lot tougher than he is. And the first time he raises his middle finger to them, they break it off. And then he realizes, oh, I'm lower on the, you know, in the pecking order than what I thought.
But there's a larger implication here.
Mm-hmm.
I think. I presume that Kane Kellett, 24 years of age, up there in Woodstock, mm-hmm. Illinois, probably hasn't given too much consideration to his relationship to God.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. Might have been raised in a Christian home.
Mm-hmm.
Might have gone to Sunday school when
mm-hmm.
he was a little kid. Maybe, maybe not. But I think that a person who can use an obscene gesture with a judge who has the power to send you to jail
mm-hmm.
just by holding you in contempt suggests that that this young man may be thinking that, well, on the day that I stand before the God of the universe, I'm going to flip him off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't care. There's nothing you can do to hurt me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, that goes from stupid in the McHenry County court there
yep.
to very serious.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I think that's where they're headed.
Mm-hmm.
Got a way to interrupt that that direction, Pastor Wilton?
I honestly don't know if there's a way to interrupt it. I really don't. I'm working with some young people now. As a matter of fact, a young man. I know I'm pretty sure he's not listening, so I can kind of tell his story. He's a relative of mine. I really have never known him and never really met him. And just recently, he went to get a job and got his ideal job. He's, you know, in his 30s now. Turned his life around. He goes out to get his job, and they love him. He's getting ready to start, and they call him up and says, oh, nope, you're fired. You can't work here because you have a DUI. And his past life, and I'm sure it's more than just a DUI. I'm sure there's other things that went along with it. His past life is now catching up with him. And I just had a chance to talk with him. And he said, my religious, and I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to, you know, call out any denomination. But he said, my religious upbringing did me no good. They told me that if I did certain things and said certain things and memorized certain things, that I would be happy and I would be closer to God. And he says, it never happened. As a matter of fact, my dad was taken away from me when I was 3 years old. Never understood it, hated God ever since. And because I don't have this relationship with him. And I like what you just said. Am I ready to flip off God? And he says, yeah. That's basically what he said yesterday to me. You know, I'm so mad at God. I want to just go up to him and use some not so polite terms and kind
of. So did you slap him around a little bit?
Didn't have to. What was amazing, I didn't have to do any of that because I told, you know, we sat there and we talked, and what was just amazing is he was crying out and saying, this is how much I am hurting, but I want to change my life. And I met my wife, who basically she's not quote unquote a church person, but she is very spiritual. She does pray, and she's been leading me back slowly. Instead of going back to the institutional church, I'm going back and just meeting this God that I thought that I knew. And it's when they're coming back with these questions, and they're coming back because, yeah, they've been in jail. It just didn't work out because I thought I could do exactly what you just said, flip off God, and just say, you know, I want nothing to do with you. And he goes, okay. And now here's the reality of the world. He's absolutely slamming them on the head and, you know, handing them, the world is handing them their lunch and just saying, here it is, you know, we're giving it back to you. We lied to you. And that's what the world has done. And they're now coming back and they're saying, tell me the truth. You know, and that's what we are doing. Can we intervene? As much as you can. You meet them and you just tell them the truth. You tell them, this is where you're heading. And when you get there, give me a call.
Before, I was talking about the baby boom generation, which has, it seems to have left a legacy or is in the process of leaving a legacy of rebellion against all forms of authority.
Mm-hmm.
Authority is just bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the largest implication of that is, well, God is an authority.
Mm-hmm.
God is the authority.
Mm-hmm. He's the man.
He is the man. And so if you're going to rebel against authority, then that puts you pretty much in rebellion against God. If I'm correct that the boomers have left this legacy, if this is what we're proud of as boomers,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
is that there wasn't a boundary that we didn't encounter that we didn't tear down.
Mm-hmm.
Now that those boundaries are gone, whoopee,
mm-hmm.
yay us, we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And there is chaos in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Little girls being snatched on the way home from kindergarten and disappearing and being murdered and turned up in garbage dumps.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you know, I don't have
yep.
to be graphic about it, but there's crime everywhere, whether it's drugs or whatever it is. Are the children of the boomers looking at us saying, what have you done?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they just going, yay, Mom and Dad, thanks for tearing down all those boundaries because it's party time for us. Are they doing that? What are they doing?
Nope. They're actually coming and asking for the truth. They're actually seeking, and I don't want to go to they're seekers, etc., but they are. They're just, here's the past generation tore down everything. Well, what is the truth? What is real? And we don't know anymore. There are no boundaries. There are no, because that's what kids look for. They want to know, I'm rebellious and I'm looking for the outer limit. I want to know how far I can push things until you say, can't go any farther. And that's what they want to know. Where is the edge? And what the boomers have done is dropped the edge and said, oh, no, no, no. Just you make your own decisions. You go your own way. And the truth is, I don't know where I'm supposed to go. I have nothing to compare to.
So from your perspective as
mm-hmm.
a boomer,
mm-hmm.
dealing with post-boomers
mm-hmm.
who are saying, give me the truth,
mm-hmm.
how are the adults or the older people who are in a position to answer that question, how are we doing? when they say, what is the truth? Because maybe they've just spent 6 months in jail enjoying what they thought was a no-boundary existence. When they finally wise up a little bit and say, you know what, is there anybody here and give me some truth?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody there to give it to them?
We decide that some of the truth is, well, let's go back to the catechism. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments. Let's go back to the law. And that becomes the truth. And the reality is, what is the law there for? Yeah, it's to curb us and to reflect, etc. And it's also to show us we are just so unbelievably incompetent. We are so far, we cannot hold to any of this stuff. That is the truth. And the reality becomes, all right, I want you to meet this guy. I want you to meet somebody. And I want you to meet this Jesus. He's real. He's not just a storybook character. He's not somebody that you hear about and really need stories. He is real. The young man that talked to me yesterday had said, in my upbringing, Jesus was just a neat character. And I was told that the stories about Jesus are just to show us, you know, they're really not real. They're just there to show us, you know, to teach us things, you know, how to live, etc. And so Jesus was never real to him. And if sitting down and coming to and having a chance to teach him, this is an alive faith. This is real. This isn't something that you have to memorize.
This sounds like a good news, bad news moment here, because we've studied the book of Judges here on our Bible study program. There is a kind of a cycle there that moves through the entire book of Judges where God blesses people, and instead of responding in love to that blessing, it produces a kind of a smugness or a self-centeredness.
Yep. Absolutely.
Which leads to self-exaltation, which leads to adversity from the hand of God, which leads to repentance, or certainly introspection. And then after repentance come the blessings again. So it sounds like we may be saying that for the post-boomers, they may be at that introspective period where talking about repentance might have an opening. And I'm a little concerned that we might miss this moment. If those people, those younger people, teenagers, 20-somethings, are saying, oh, just give me the truth. Can you give me the truth? That there won't be any voices there to give it to them.
Exactly. What we have is we have people out there, won't name who they are, but we have people out there saying, see, the truth is this. If God's happy with you, he will give you lots and lots of things. They call them blessings. And he's going to give you lots and lots of stuff. So what people start to go after, they start to go after the lots and lots of stuff. And that is some of the boomers. You know, good job, good retirement, good stuff.
The trophy
stuff. Oh, absolutely. And that's what they've been told. And the reality is, just what you said, I love the cycle of the judges. You know, you think you're closer to God when you got lots and lots of stuff, God's happy with you. And actually, that's when you're the farthest away from him. You're actually in the valley when you have all this stuff because it separates you. And your eyes are now taken off of him, and now they're placed onto
the 401k.
Yeah, exactly, onto stuff. And you're so far from him, then when adversity does come, where do you go? And all of a sudden, he's... Go ahead.
So we got about 3-4 minutes left here. When that moment comes for you... When there's a young person, or maybe somebody who's your age, I don't know, who says, oh, man, you know, I've followed the lead of these people who said, break down all the boundaries and do whatever you want. If it feels good, do it. And it's not good. It's bad. And now I've got a DUI and I can't get a job and all this kind of stuff. And they look at you, Pastor Wilkin, and they say, can you just give me some truth? How do you handle that exquisite moment?
Oh, yeah. You walk with them. Because I don't have the answers. And that's sometimes what they're looking for. They're looking for, what is the answer? Just give it to me so I can do it, and then I'm right again, and life is good. And the truth is, no. Here's an opportunity to walk with you. I'll walk alongside of you.
So the relationship exceeds the answer.
Yeah. And the answer is the relationship, and it's not with me. it starts out there. That's what they're looking for. And they'll come and they'll ask and they'll say, you know, well, you're doing all this stuff. Can I come and work alongside of you? I tell them, I don't have any money for you. I have no jobs for you. And they go, okay, but I just want to be here. I want to start getting some of what you have. And what I have is not me. What we need to be doing is taking us out of the equation and introducing them to Jesus. And that's the whole process. Get out of the way. I think I've heard you say it. Get out of the way of the Holy Spirit. Yeah.
And do you see transformations?
Absolutely. Without a doubt. I'm dealing with some right now. A young lady that came to me said, Pastor, I just can't go to church anymore. And I thought, no, let's not go into a faith. You know, I'm not here to shake your faith. I'm here to show you something different. She says, I got to be active in my faith 7 days a week, not just one day a week for an hour. And she's been working with me ever since. I have a young man that basically said, I left God. I left the church. I wanted nothing to do with it. 7 years later, he's coming back, the prodigal son. He's so beat up. And he's working with me now. I have nothing to give him. And I ask him, why do you stay here? He says, because I've never been happier, more content in all my life. And this other guy, people are coming and saying, all right, you have something that's intangible, and it's not me. Do I have it? Yes.
Seems like if I could figure out how that would take what we're talking about mm-hmm. here, your experience, and bottle it up and see if we could not distribute it to other people so we could expand this. But you know what? Every time we take something, put it in mm-hmm. bottles and start.
You got it.
It takes about a year and a half, and mm-hmm. it's ruined.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's just been turned into something else.
Yep, yep. We want to do a little evangelism program.
So is there
program.
A way to advance this dynamic?
Yes, there is. And it's called getting back to the basics. I'm not really sure, because now you're asking for something that it's inexplicable. You can't explain it. And it's called,
well,
let's get back to...
if we don't advance it seems like we're putting our bushel under the bed, you know, our candle mm-hmm. under the bed so that nobody can see it.
Yeah, no, true. But sometimes people look at, okay, contemporary worship versus traditional worship, and some people say, oh, if we had a contemporary band, we're really exciting, etc., and everybody's got their hands up, now we're really worshiping God, and now we're doing something, and I'm telling them the truth. No, you're not, because you're just going after a feeling and an emotion. I'm not dissing contemporary worship, because that's where I really want to be. I enjoy it. But what you need to do is get back into the relationship with God, strictly with Jesus, unconditionally, not to grow a church and not to be cool and neat, but just because this is what he tells you to do.
Just because this is what he tells you to do. It really is that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Pastor Randy Wilkin, thank you, sir. Good to see you again.
Yes.
Enjoy this beautiful day.
Oh, yeah.
And on our Bible study tomorrow, we will continue with Luke chapter 23. Pastor Tim Ostermeyer will be here, verses 13 through 25. And Pastor Jack Struve of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Milwaukee will be our Ask the Pastor guest. Thanks for listening.
Listen to Chuck Ratherton guests Monday through Friday at the same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.